गृहं वनं उपविशेत् प्रव्रजे द्वाद्विजोत्तम आश्रमान् आश्रमं गच्छेन् नान्यताम परश्चरेत्
Desiring to fulfill his material desires, should live at home with his family, and a householder who is eager to purify his consciousness should enter the forest, whereas the purified Brahmana should accept the renounced order of life. One who is not surrendered to me should move progressively from one ashrama to another, never acting otherwise.
So, this chapter mainly describes about the duties of a Brahmachari. And also about the duties of a grahastha are described. The occupation duties of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra is described. So we saw from the verse number 31 to 36 described about if you remember, there are two types of brahmacharis. One who actually naishtik brahmachari, another is the Upakurvana Brahmachari. So verse number 31 to 36 described about the duties and the attitude and behavior of a Naishtika Brahmachari, or one who remains in the ashrama of a guru throughout her life. From 37 to 43 describes the duties of a Brahmachari who will become householder. Who will become householder in the future, or one who actually decides to. 37 to 43. So 38th verse is described. Griham vanam opo vishet pravraje va vijottamaha ashramat ashramam gachin. Vijottama refers to a brahmana, that means a twice born person. A twice born person becomes a householder, griham, or vanam, harime. He may become vanaprastha or opavisheta or a sannyasi in the case of a brahmana. In the sense, like actually in the traditional Vedic culture, traditionally speaking, only a brahmana is supposed to become a sannyasi. So that's what Vishnachakutraku says, that traditionally a second born person, a twice born person, either becomes a householder, vanaprastha, or a sannyasi in the case of a brahmana. And then ashramat ashramam gachin. Ashramat ashramam gachin means one should progressively move from one ashram to another. It's like one should progressively move from brahmachari to grahastha to vanaprastha to sannyas, and not in the reverse direction. Ashramat ashramam means should progressively move. And na anyatama, na anyatama mat parascharet, na anyatamat, na anyata amat parascharet. Amat para, mat para means one who is surrendered to me. Krishna is saying one who is surrendered to me. Amat para means one who is not surrendered to me. So this is what Krishna is saying, is that this is a rule for especially one who is not surrendered to me. Na anyata amat parescharet. That means like there is no other way for the person who is not surrendered to me. So what is the way which is explained by Krishna? That means for a person who is not surrendered to him, he has to follow the varnashram duties in a progressive manner. In a progressive manner, for a person who is not surrendered to him. There is no other way. Means like, if a person acts other way, that means he'll incur more sinful reactions. So I'll just quickly go through Vishnu Chakra's purport and then I'll actually read from there. So basically, a person enters an ashram according to one's qualification. Say a person enters a Brahmachari ashram and then maybe later Grihastha ashram. Basically, one has to see according to one's own nature and qualification. And especially Kali Yuga is an age where people, the whole atmosphere is actually created in such a way that we tend to follow somebody else's nature instead of our own nature. And then after a long time, it actually takes us to realize that, oh, actually, I did not follow my nature, and then we realize it. Either like, it happens in the case of either Grihastha, even in the case of Brahmachari, like sometimes a person joins the ashram because of certain, maybe because of certain initial enthusiasm or because sometimes it could be certain out of passion that, or because of certain fanatical attitude or not being able to see one's own nature, and then later one realizes. So one enters an ashram according to one's qualification. So if he has desires, he becomes a householder, and if he has no desire, it means like if he has no desire because of completely purifying his heart, then he becomes a vanaprastha. So when he has desires, he becomes a householder. If he has no desire, he becomes a vanaprastha. And if he is and if the person is a brahmana and without desire, then he becomes a sannyasi. So then Vishnu Chakravarti says, so this is an important point. If some desire to do so, they may go through all the ashramas. That means after Brahmachari, then Grihastha, then Vanaprastha, and finally Sannyasa. But one should not enter the ashram in a reverse order. So from a Varnashram point of view, coming from Sannyasi to say Grihastha, it is considered a fall. And also, two things Vishnu Chakravarti is saying. That one should not enter the ashram in a reverse order, and also one should not be without ashrama. Basically, one has to be situated in one of the ashramas. So basically, ashram, what is the meaning of the word ashram? Nobody knows, like? Yeah, the place where spiritual culture is prominent. The place where spiritual culture is prominent. So basically, one has to take shelter of an ashrama, and unless, and especially Vishnu Chakravarti says, unless one is my devotee, means like in the case of a devotee who is surrendered to Krishna, even if a person is not able to follow these rules, it is all right in the sense. But if a person is not a devotee, then one has to go through the ashramas in a progressive manner, and one should not be without ashram. But sometimes, what Vishnu Chakravarti says, but in the case of a devotee, if a person is completely surrendered to Krishna, then this is, even if a person is not able to, suppose if a person goes through the ashram in a reverse manner, or if a person is without ashram, then that will be actually Krishna will take care of that. That is what he is saying. If one is a devotee, then one does not have to follow the rules of ashram. If the devotee enters ashramas in a different order, that means if a devotee goes from sannyas ashram to grihastha ashram, sannyas to vanaprastha or vanaprastha to brahmachari or something, if a devotee enters the ashram in a reverse order, or if a devotee is without any ashrama, then there is no fault. That's what he says. So I will just read. There is one interesting conversation of Bhakti Vinod Thakur regarding the same point. So I will just read that. It actually is related to exactly the same point. Yeah. This is from Jaiva Dharma. Akhilana Thakur has written many books. One of the books he wrote is actually Jaiva Dharma, is one of the famous books of Akhilana Thakur. In the Jaiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written the book in the form of a conversation. Like somebody is asking question and another person is answering, like different conversation. There is a conversation between Yadava Das and Ananta Das. So Yadava Das is asking, "Oh saintly Babaji, householder devotees live under the shelter of the Varnashram system. May a householder devotee leave the Varnashram system." Can a householder devotee leave the Varnashram system? So Ananta Das is answering. "The Vaishnava religion is very broad and generous. Another name for the Vaishnava religion is Jaiva Dharma." Jaiva Dharma is another name for Jaiva Dharma is basically, it comes from the word Jiva Dharma. Jiva is a living entity. What is the dharma for living entity? It's basically to serve the Supreme Lord. That is the Vaishnavism. Another name for Vaishnava Dharma is, Vaishnava religion is Jaiva Dharma. That is the name of the book. Which is the religion for all human beings. In fact, religion for all living entities. This means that every human being is qualified to join the Vaishnava religion. Even outcasts may embrace the Vaishnava religion and live as householders. For them, there is no Varnashram. But those who break the Varnashram rules of sannyas, sannyas in the sense like suppose sometimes the sannyasi falls down like that. Those who break the Varnashram rules of sannyas, by associating with the devotees, attain pure devotional service and be householder devotees. Suppose those who break the Varnashram rules of sannyas may, by associating with the devotees, attain pure devotional service and be householder devotees. For them, there are no rules of Varnashram. Even if a person falls down from sannyas, but if he sincerely takes shelter of the association of devotees, and then he becomes a pure devotee, then even though he has broken the rules of Varnashram, there is no fault, that's what he says. And then, those who, because of their mindsets, have left the Varnashram system, may still, along with their children, take shelter of pure devotional service in the association of the devotees. Then, they are householder devotees, but they are not part of the Varnashram system. Suppose if somebody, because their misdeeds have left the Varnashram system, but they can still, along with the children, take shelter of pure devotional service in the association of devotees. So they are still considered as householder devotees, but they are not part of the Varnashram system. And then, this is the most important point. Then, this Ananta Das is saying, but actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur is writing this book. So he is saying that householder devotees are of two kinds. The first is Varnashram Dharma Yukta. That means those who follow the Varnashram system. And second is Varnashram Dharma Rahita. Those who do not follow the Varnashram system. So then at this point Yadava Das is asking a question. He is asking, but of the two, which is the best? Of the two, which is the best? Is the devotee who is actually following the Varnashram or the devotee who is not following the Varnashram? So can anybody answer? Of the two, who is the best? One who is following the Varnashram. Householder devotees are of two types. Varnashram Dharma Yukta and Varnashram Dharma Rahita. So of the two, who is the best? One is following the Varnashram. Any other answer? Is it correct?
If he is not devotee. This is for devotee.
He is not following the Varnashram. He is not following the Varnashram. But he is a devotee. That means he is surrendered to the Lord.
There are two devotees. One is actually those who are devotees one actually outside the varnashram, who are not following the varnashram dharma. Another is the devotee who is following the varnashram dharma. So out of the two, who is the best? Which is the best? That is the answer, but I will just tell in more particular what is the answer. So Anantha Das is replying, he who has more devotion is the best. It's not about Varnashram Dharma Yukta or Varnashram Dharma Rahita. One who has more devotion, he is the best. Suppose if neither have any devotion, suppose one is following the Varnashram and one is not following the Varnashram. If both of them are not devotees, then from a material point of view, one who is following the Varnashram is actually superior to one who is not following the Varnashram. But from the spiritual point of view, both of them are degraded because neither has any devotion. But if both are devotees, one who is following Varnashram, one who is not following Varnashram, both are devotees, if you want to know who is the best, you should not make the criteria as one who is following the Varnashram or one who is not following the Varnashram. You have to make the criteria as one who has more devotion. So he is considered to be the best. So this is from a, that's why this is something which we have to keep in mind. But especially amat pares chare, that means like if a person is not surrendered to Krishna, then one has to, it becomes imperative to follow the Varnashram. So Hridayan Maharaj writes that he mentions in the first paragraph, he talks about how Dvijottama refers to a Brahmana, and then he says that Brahmana, generally Kshatriyas and Vaishyas they are not supposed to take the renounced order, only Brahmana is actually supposed to take the renounced order. So Brahmanas, however, may directly accept the renounced order of life, even without going through Vanaprastha. And, there is one more point which Hridayan Maharaj writes in the third paragraph. What he says is that, so Krishna is saying that one who is not surrendered to him, for him, these rules of ashram, that means, either being situated in one of the ashram or going through the ashram in a reversed manner, these actually one should be careful that one should not break these rules. One has to follow the rules. So one point he explains is that, the third paragraph, but however one performs illicit activities on the strength of being transcendental to Vedic social divisions, then one is revealed to be a materialistic neophyte and not an advanced devotee of the Lord. So if a person is not surrendered to Krishna and if he progresses from sannyas ashram to grahastha ashram, it is definitely a great sin. But if it is a devotee, he is surrendered to Krishna, but if he goes through from sannyas ashram to grahastha ashram, or if a person is not situated in an ashram, then it is not considered a big fault, because at least he is devotionally surrendered to Krishna. But sometimes what Hridayan Maharaj is saying is that, but then sometimes if a person hears this statement, on the strength of devotional service, if a person deliberately for example, a sannyasi performs some illicit activities or something, the strength of devotional service, when we neglect the varnashram duties, then it becomes actually an offense actually. Then it comes under the category of offense. There are sometimes devotees who may actually fall down, but the accidental fall down are actually overlooked by the devotee, overlooked by Krishna. And then when a person falls down because of helplessness, or when a person falls down because of the strength of practicing devotional service, then it becomes actually offense. So that is what, then he says, that an advanced devotee who remains aloof from material sense gratification is not bound by the Vedic social divisions. Thus, even a householder may live very austerely, traveling and preaching Krishna consciousness. And even a sannyasi may sometimes engage women in the devotional service of Lord Krishna. Sometimes we may see, like especially, this is like Pradhan Maharaj is writing from a Kali Yuga perspective, that sometimes like, there are devotees who are very advanced. They may be householders, but they are actually practically like sannyasis, like they are very much like dedicated for preaching. We seeing that. And even sannyasis, sometimes, especially you see in the Western world, many of the preaching for the Westerners, it goes through the actually the yoga groups. Because one of the way by which they try to give Krishna consciousness is that actually by trying to preach to those who are actually interested in yoga. They have at least some inclination towards the Eastern philosophy of Eastern this. And in the yogi groups, most of the people who actually come are actually the ladies. But even in the GEV, sometimes yoga groups, they come. But most of the people, yogi groups come, but most of them actually are ladies. So sometimes the sensei, a sannyasi may have to preach to them. It's not, of course, there is, so that's what Vidyan Mara is saying, that sometimes an advanced devotee may have to engage. The most advanced devotees cannot be restricted by the rituals and regulations of the Varnashram system, and they move freely around the world distributing love of Godhead. So, Matpara indicates a pure devotee of the Lord, who always keeps the Lord fixed in his heart and consciousness. One who falls down to become a victim of sense gratification is not fully established on the platform of Matpara and should rigidly observe the social divisions and regulations in order to lead a pious life. So next verse. Is that clear, that at least about this rules and the word a Matpara is, because sometimes this Varnashram topic is always we feel uncomfortable to speak on, because Kali Yuga scenario sometimes makes people actually helpless. Although they may want to follow this, but then sometimes the situation may be such that they may not be able to follow this. So at least the main thing is like we have to understand that this becomes a must, especially when it's not a devotee. And if a person is a devotee, if he is not able to be situated properly in the Varnashram, then at least, okay, we should concentrate seriously on devotional service and then try to serve in the movement of Lord Chaitanya, how we can preach more and propagate more. That becomes, one should focus on that. So next verse. Griharti Satrishim Bharyam Udvahet Ajugupsitam Yaviyasim tu vayasa Yamsa Varnam Anukrama.
One who desires to establish family life should marry a wife of his own caste, who is beyond reproach and younger in age. If one desires to accept many wives, he must marry them after the first marriage, and each wife should be of a successively lower caste.
So as you remember, these verses are talking about a brahmachari who has lived in the ashram and then he decides to get married. So this verse is talking about like what kind of a girl one should select. So basically three qualities are mentioned. One is that sadrishi means possessing similar characteristics or compatibility or having equal characteristics. Similar characteristics, sadrishi. That is the first quality of a wife. And second is ajugupsitam, one whose character is beyond reproach. And third is that younger in age, yaviyasim tu vayasa, And Kalyan Maharaj, he says that ideally 5 to 10 years younger. But traditionally speaking, that if you see traditionally, if you, at least maybe the older generation, sometimes the difference in the age between the husband and wife is something like 10 years also. You observe? Because that becomes easier for the wife to actually serve the husband. The husband actually grows old. The husband is 78, still the wife can take care of him. So it's seen from an ideal point of view, he's explained 5 to 10 years. And like about accepting many wives. So like, what is the reason why actually polygamy is allowed in the Vedic culture? Anybody knows? Man accepting many wives. What is the reason? Prabhupada explains. Produce more Krishna consciousness.
No, women are
it's good speculation.
The number of women are more.
For
them to be protected.
Yeah, exactly, same point. Well, generally the female population is more. So, like, why is that? We have at least have the understanding of this actually. Presently, this may not, Kali Yuga is not an age for actually practicing this. But we should have the right understanding so that if, because many people actually criticize that, they criticize certain aspects of the Vedic culture in order to break the faith of the people. On this, at least we should be able to give the right answer there. The reason is that because generally female population is more than the male population. In order that to actually give shelter to the women, sometimes the man would marry more more women. They actually, in the sense, So they say they want to actually increase the Muslim population, so they want to actually increase. But the point is that the principle is to give shelter to the women. The principle of is based on some fanatic, this one. We want to increase our similar. So then if you want to actually increase, then why not increase on the merit of simply by producing children? You can't increase. Based on how you actually raise the children, with what consciousness you produce the children, all these things are actually in the Vedic culture. It is not simply by producing more children increase the number of population of your religion. It is about what consciousness you produce the children, how you train the children, how you educate the children. The principles, that is how we actually increase the this one, not simply by actually this one. So their idea is very perverted idea.
Lord Krishna merits only ladies just to protect them.
They came after Lord Krishna. They came to take shelter of Lord Krishna, and it was actually allowed. So we have to be aware of one important principle is that, like, we should not apply the dharma which was a previous age in some other time. And we should not impose our dharma on somebody else who is at a different time, who is at a different place. This is something like many times we commit these mistakes, that we try to impose our dharma on somebody else. Or we try to say, when he is following that, why not me? We don't actually realize, like, what is the time he was living in, like, what is his position, Kshatriya time, what are his responsibilities, etc. So, of course, another reason which is explained about why a man can marry more wives, in the case of Kshatriya, the reason which is explained is that, because the Kshatriya's duties involve, like, controlling, of giving protection to the countries, it involves a lot of passion, like fighting with the enemies. So in order for a person to perform passionate activities, one needs the inspiration from the opposite sex. So passion, passionate activities, in order to perform, that one needs the inspiration from the opposite sex. So sometimes the Kshatriya is allowed to marry more women because his services involve lot of passion. We'll read in the purport in the 5th canto, 1st chapter, in the Privrata Maharaja section, Prabhupada writes that. So in the case of Brahmanas, their services, their main source of inspiration is from actually sound vibration. Because their activities are the mode of goodness, their main source of inspiration from the sound vibration, by reading the scriptures or by the holy names. So basically there are only two forms of inspiration. One is the sound vibration. If we are not inspired from the sound, then we will need the inspiration from the, so we're talking about the men, they will need the inspiration from the opposite sex. So that is another reason why the previous ages, the Kshatriya was allowed to marry more women. And another point which is explained in this purport is that in the case of a Brahmana also it is explained that he may be marrying more women for the sake of actually giving protection. But one point which is explained is that in the case of a Brahmana, if he marries more women, the successive wives must be from the lower caste. It's an additional detail which is explained, I think, to avoid some quarrel, something like that. So he says, the first wife should be from a Brahmana caste, second wife is from a Kshatriya, third wife is from Vaishya, fourth wife is from Shudra. So just some injunctions to be aware of this. So next verse, we'll recite together. Ijya dhyayana dhanani sarvesham cha vijanmanam pratigraho dhyapanam cha brahmanasyaiva yajanam. So this verse describes that how should these brahmanas who become householders, how should they maintain themselves? What are the occupations? So three things are especially explained. Dvijanmanam means like all twice born people. So all twice born people, it can refer to a brahmana, kshatriya or vaishya. For all three of them, they should perform these three activities. Ijya, Adhyayana and Dhanani. They must sponsor the sacrifice, study Vedic literature and give charity. And the third and fourth line describes especially of a duty of only of a Brahmana, which does not apply for a Kshatriya and Vaishya twice born. But the Brahmanas, only the Brahmanas are allowed to accept charity. The Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are not allowed to accept charity. No. So, the Brahmana, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas who are twice born, they must sponsor the sacrifice, study the Vedic literature and give charity. So, these three duties are for all the twice born, from Brahmana, Kshatriya and Vaishya. Studying the Vedic literature, even a Kshatriya can study, Vaishya can study, Brahmana can study. Sponsoring the sacrifice, all three of them can do. Giving charity, all three of them can do. But the duties which only a Brahmana should do is that giving charity, the accepting charity, teaching Vedic knowledge and performing sacrifice on behalf of others. That means the priestly duties, acting as priests. So this is from again. So because one of the reason why the Kshatriyas are not allowed to teach the Vedas is that the Bhagavatam class will become an Ishta Goshti. It will become like a little management, this one. Kshatriya is involved in management, he wants to like get certain things done. So he will communicate that through the Bhagavatam class. So that's the answer. So if you see the system of Varnashram, we can at least appreciate the system. Then in the case of a Brahmana, he is supposed to teach, but he is not allowed to exercise control. He is supposed to be detached and actually exhibiting control. Kshatriya is allowed to control, but he is not allowed to actually teach. He can study the scriptures, he should be studying, should know the scriptures, but he is not supposed to teach, because his controlling mentality will come in his actually teaching. In the case of a Brahmana, he is allowed to teach, but just because you are teaching, that means you cannot control others. You should be detached from that. So this combination actually it makes the system actually so good. So next verse. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, without the assistance of the qualified Brahmana, the lower classes cannot properly study the Vedic literature. Because unless you have a teacher, others cannot be able to study and then perform sacrifice or even give charity. So getting the translation, 41st verse.
Brahmana, who considers accepting charity from others will destroy hostility, spiritual influence and fame. So maintain himself by the other two Brahmic occupations, namely teaching Vedic knowledge and performing sacrifice. If the Brahmana considers that those two occupations also compromise his spiritual position, then he should collect rejected grains in the agricultural fields and live without any dependence on others.
So this, the previous verse described the duties of a Brahmana, that is accepting charity, teaching Vedic knowledge and
performing
sacrifice on behalf of others. By these three occupations, a Brahmana can maintain himself. So then this verse describes how should a highly advanced Brahmana should maintain himself. So this verse describes the fourth way by which a highly advanced Brahmana should maintain himself. A highly advanced Brahmana should actually completely depend on the mercy of the Lord. Such a Brahmana, he will consider that accepting charity from others, it will actually destroy his austerity. And also acting like a priest and performing the priestly duties on behalf of others, that will also, he will understand that it may contaminate his actually mentality. Because you don't know like where the money is coming from. You become little dependent on the other person. And even when you are teaching Vedic knowledge, it's explained that like sometimes, so after teaching Vedic knowledge, somebody may give dakshina, but then somebody may try to control that, you have to tell these points in your class. Sometimes they may say that. So they sponsor all the preachers to come for this one, but make sure that these points are conveyed. It's like there are certain agent, like one can become dependent, we become contaminated. So it's explained how highly advanced Brahmana should maintain himself by collecting rejected grains on agricultural fields. This is from a traditional point of view. This is called a Shiloncha Vritti. Accepting the rejected grains from the agricultural fields. But what is a practical example of this thing? Raghunath Das Goswami, like, remember Chaitan Charitamrita, the past time you must have heard so many times. Raghunath Das Goswami, initially when he came to Jagannath Puri, what was he doing?
He was eating
initially. Initially, his father would actually send some money and he was not eating out of that. He would use that money to actually feed the other Vaishnavas. And then after that, he was actually standing outside the Simha Dwar and then he would be begging from others. He no longer accepted the money from the father. He was just begging. And then after that, what did he do? After that, Telangana cows or one more thing before that?
Leftover
prasad in the marketplace. whatever prasad was actually left over, like he would eat that. Because he felt like if I am begging from others, then I may start thinking, oh, this person will give me, oh, this person will not give me. Ramananda Goswami was thinking that. I may develop the mentality of a prostitute, like, oh, this person will give me, or this person will not give me, who will give me, like that. He then stopped that. And then he started actually collecting the leftover prasad from the marketplace. And then the last thing he did was that he was washing the rice which was even rejected by the Telangana cows, and then he would remove the outer portion and he would wash the inner portion and then he would eat it. And Mahaprabhu heard that. What he said, Mahaprabhu? What is that verse then? Mahaprabhu
Bhaktagane.
Yeah. Yeah, the same verse. So when Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sees Vairagya exhibited by his devotees, he becomes highly, very highly pleased. Mahaprabhu Bhaktagana Vairagya Pradhan. When the devotees actually exhibit renunciation, Mahaprabhu becomes very pleased. So the principle, we have to at least understand the principle of actually depending on the Lord. So how we apply that principle, that in the present circumstances we have to actually see that. But the principle has to be taken. So basically the point is that, like Hriyan Maharaj writes, like in the purport, a Brahmana should not become a professional beggar for his personal maintenance. Say sometimes in America there are many big preachers who collect huge amounts of money by begging on television and radio. If a Brahmana or Vaishnava considers that being a professional beggar is weakening his austerity, destroying his spiritual influence and giving him a bad reputation, then he should give up that process. One may beg everyone to contribute to the cause of the Supreme Lord, but one will be diminished in austerity, influence and reputation by begging for one's personal livelihood. This is a very important point. A Brahmana who teaches as a means of livelihood may often be curbed in his teaching. If he is teaching as a means of livelihood, he may be curbed that you are not supposed to tell these points, you have to tell only these things. You become curved. If you use that teaching as a livelihood, if you are not using that teaching as a livelihood, you can always say that I am not dependent on your actually money. You can say that I will speak the truth. You can say that. So then one who performs sacrifice may be manipulated by materialistic worshippers. In this way, a Brahmana may be placed in an embarrassing and compromised position. So therefore, high class Brahmana, they completely depend on the mercy of the Lord.
Chanakya is one of the examples.
Yeah, Chanakya Pandit is one of the classic examples. And you know the example of Vasishtha? One of the example of how, because of performing a priestly duties, a person becomes contaminated, is that Vasishtha Muni, the example comes in, you all read any 9th canto classes, no? 9th canto chapter 2. So this is one of the Shukadeva Goswami describes about the one of the sons of Vaivasvata Manu, that is Prishadra. Vaivasvata Manu's sons, Prishadra. So Prishadra was a Kshatriya, but then he dedicated himself for protecting the cows. So Prabhupada writes that sometime cow protection was considered so important in the Vedic culture, sometimes a Kshatriya would dedicate his life for cow protection. Means in order to protect the cows, Prishadra would actually be awake throughout the night. So because he was performing this service, he did not have any dynasty from his side. Like he did not get married. He just dedicated himself for the Kshatriya duty of protecting the cows. So once when he was protecting the cows, that a tiger came and attacked the cows in the middle of the night. And all the cows started screaming. The Prishadra came to understood and then actually tiger is attacking the cows. And he took up his sword and mistaking the cow to be the tiger, he actually with great force he actually cut the tiger thinking it to be cut the cow thinking it to be a tiger. Actually the cow got cut and with the edge of the sword the tiger's ear got cut. And the tiger immediately ran away from there. Tiger or lion?
Tiger.
Tiger, yeah. Tiger immediately ran away from there. And then in the morning, but it was night time, there was no light. When the morning came, he realized that he actually had killed the cow. So then he felt how great blunder he had committed. Because he had committed the mistake unknowingly. And then he came and told this to his guru, Vasishtha. So Vasishtha Rishi, I don't know which Vasishtha, it's Vasishtha, this sage Vasishtha, he actually cursed him that because you killed the cow, you will actually, take birth as a Shudra. What is the exactly particular curse?
You become a Shudra.
Yeah.
You perform
austerity
so that you
Will
take birth.
Yeah, he will become a Shudra, he cursed him to become a Shudra. I think there is one more detail to the curse. But then Prishadra, he accepted the curse gratefully. The point which I want to convey is that Krishna Chakrataka writes that actually Prishadra committed this sin unknowingly. We say like, okay, you commit a mistake unknowingly, you get the reaction. But then he committed the sin unknowingly. He had dedicated for such a long time for cow protection. Sometimes you cannot actually reject a person just because of one mistake unknowingly. You should see how he had dedicated to performed so many services previously. But this Vasishtha Rishi, he gave a disproportionate punishment. He became so angry for the unknowing sin, he committed a disproportionate punishment. And why it is, especially when you give a punishment, the punishment should be proportionate to the act. If we give more punishment than what he deserves, then you commit the mistake. You will also get implicated. Listen. And when you give less punishment, suppose if a person has committed 100 murders, so you give 10 rupees fine. Or somebody has stolen 10 rupees of pickpocket and you give a verdict of you should be murdered. Disproportionate punishment. Then a person, so that means that person who is giving the punishment is contaminated. So Vasishtha gave a disproportionate punishment, that means he was contaminated. So what was the cause of his contamination? Because he was performing the priestly duties. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that because he was performing the priestly duties, he got contaminated because of the priestly duties are depending on others. So this is something, an important point, in the sense that...
Vishwarupa was not agreeing to take the
priestly duties. Vishwarupa also was not agreeing to the priestly duties, but then he said that because you are all superiors, although I know that it will implicate my sin, that I will actually perform this duty. And which other example? Shukracharya was performing the priestly duties. Shukracharya in the story of Ayati Maharaj, when Devayani came and actually complained about Sarmishta, Devayani went to Vrishaparva, Sarmishta's father. The Shukracharya was feeling bad internally. So because I have taken the occupation of priestly duty, so I have to go and reconcile. Because I am depending on the Dakshina given by this Vrishaparva. So I have to go and reconcile this conflict. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that Shukracharya in his heart, he did not like this. He condemned the priestly occupation. And he praised the Shilonchya Vritti. Srila Uchavrati is what we are talking about, that depending on the grains which were left over in the market field. The principle we can take is that, like the principle which we can apply is that to the extent we become dependent on others, it also actually will also affect, like to the extent we become dependent on some materialistic people, we will not be able to depend on Krishna. To that extent, our dependence on Krishna will get compromised. So, as far as possible, how everybody has to see individually, but how we can actually increase the dependence on Krishna. So, anybody has any points on this? So, there one more thing. 42nd we already, 41 we completed, 42nd. So 42nd verse says that, why does a Brahmana undergo such a pain? Because sometimes when we hear this, why does a Brahmana, high class Brahmana, maintain himself by collecting grains from the marketplace in the agricultural field, leftover grains? Why does a Brahmana undergo such a pain? Because in order to attain happiness after death, krichraya tapase cheha pretya ananta sukhaya cha, pretya ananta sukhaya cha, pretya after death, in order to attain unlimited happiness, a brahmana undergoes even such difficult austerities. So basically, if you see, the real wealth of a brahmana is actually austerity. Tapodhanam, it's explained in different places in the Bhagavatam also, Jamadagni, it's explained, Tapodhanam. Real wealth of a Brahmana is actually austerity. Even Srila Radhanath Maharaj explained in regards to Brahmachari. He said that Brahmachari means one who takes pleasure in saying no to sense gratification. One who takes pleasure in performing austerity. In the case of Brahmana, the real wealth of a Brahmana, you can say either a Brahmachari Brahmana or a Grahastha Brahmana. Because it's not that only a Brahmachari is supposed to act Brahmanically, even the Grahastha is supposed to act Brahmanically. Real wealth of a Brahmana is actually austerity. So austerity, because when we talk about austerity, the word tapasya can actually, it has different meanings. One is that, of course, we, like depending, increasing our dependence on the Lord here with respect to this, the occupation duty of a Brahmana. Another context, tapasya means, another definition which is given for tapasya is that sticking to one's swadharma in all circumstances. To stick to one's swadharma in all circumstances, that is considered a tapasya. You will see this definition in the 11th canto or in the 1st canto, you will see that. Another definition of tapasya is that concentration of the mind. Concentration of the mind. Concentrating on this also, this definition also given in one purport in the, I think, 8th canto. So tapasya can refer to like sticking to one's swadharma, tapasya can refer to concentrating one's mind, focus. And third is that actually, like actually increasing our dependence on the Lord in this way. So Dayan Maharaj writes, those devotees engaged 24 hours a day in spreading the mission of Lord Krishna are beyond the platform of renunciation or sense gratification because they engage everything in Krishna's service. A pure devotee of the Lord eats only to get strength for serving the Lord and does not eat, accept either sumptuous or meager food simply for the body's sake. However, everything may be accepted for the Lord, even sumptuous meals. So this is a very important point now. A Brahmana who is not working day and night to spread the glories of the Lord should feel embarrassed to eat sumptuously for his personal sense gratification. A Brahmana who is not working day and night to spread the glories of the Lord should feel embarrassed to eat sumptuously for his personal sense gratification. But a renounced Vaishnava preacher may accept invitations from all classes of pious people, and just to bless their homes, he will eat the opulent foods they offer to him. Similarly, he sometimes eats sumptuously to get strength for defeating atheists and impersonalists. So, last part of the, again, another beautiful point Hridayananda Maharaj writes. He gives a gradations. He says, a devotee, a Brahmana devotee is higher than a Brahmana who is not a devotee, who is a pious Brahmana. But higher than a devotee is that a devotee who is preaching the glories of the Lord. He is giving three levels. One is that a pious, highly qualified Brahmana, more superior to him is a Brahmana who is a devotee of the Lord. But more superior to a Brahmana who is a devotee is that devotee who is engaged in spreading the glories of the Lord, a preacher devotee. So in that sense, so Hridayananda Maharaj is giving the right gradation, which we have to keep in mind, seeing from the point of view of the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, 43rd verse. Shiloncha vritya paritushta chitto dharmam makantam virajam jushanaha mayarpitatma grihayeva tishtan nati prasaktas samupaiti shantim. Just one more point before coming to this verse, the previous purport. It's another beautiful point Hridayananda Maharaj writes in the first paragraph. Because previous verse talks about how a Brahmana accepts difficult austerities to enjoy unlimited happiness after death. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes a point that why should actually a person voluntarily accept austerities? The reason is that so that one should never forget that the material body is destined to grow old and become diseased and die in misery. That one should never forget the reality of old age, disease and death. So the principle of austerity that is there for all, even simply, you have to. So the next verse, Shiloncha Vrittya. Parituṣṭa chitto, satisfied by maintenance, by what? Shiloncha vrittya, by collecting grains from the field or market. Dharmam mahantam, dharmam mahantam means engaging in generous acts. The type of general acts are like receiving the gifts. But virajam, but being without material desire. My arpitatma, absorbing his mind in me, in this way the householder remaining in this ashrama without much attachment, ultimately what does he get? Samupaiti shantim, he attains liberation. This verse describes what is ultimate. The result of leading this this kind of lifestyle is that a person attains liberation at the end. So Prabhupada, this another, again this important point that some years back when Bhakti Brihat Bhagavat Maharaj, he had come to Bhakti Brihat Mridanga Prabhupada, same as Bhakti Brihat Bhagavat Maharaj. So he was telling in one class, I remember. So he was saying a simple point that talking from the point of your householders, you are saying that. How should we actually, like naturally, father, mother, they are attached to the children, etc. You are saying how to actually develop the detachment. For that he said, just like you care your children, you also actually put some time to care other children also. Or do something, give some charity to care for other children, others also. By that, we can actually give up the, will not be bound by the, will not be attached by our relationship, is it? The same point is explained here. Householders must always be magnanimous and charitable to others, being alert to curb unnecessary affection and attachment in family life. By being charitable or by helping others, one can actually curb the unnecessary affection. So it is not what is being talked about is we have to be definitely affectionate to our children, our relatives, our wife or husband. But what is being talked about is to curb the unnecessary affection. That is by actually doing something, being charitable. And of course the most important item is Mayi Arpitatma, fixing the mind on Krishna. That's what Krishna says. In the next verse, so these, the last six verses talked about the occupations of a Brahmana. A Brahmana should be a highly qualified Brahmana, should perform the austerities, as explained. The next verse, Krishna says, what is the result of serving the Brahmana devotees? Or for that matter, any devotee who is engaged in performing these austerities. What is the result of serving such a devotee? It is explained, just like a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, Krishna says, similarly, I will quickly rescue those people who actually, who give good comforts to the Brahmanas. Brahmanas may be engaged in austerities, but if somebody with his money or with his energy, if he tries to give good comforts to those Brahmana devotees who are performing those austerities, then Krishna says that I will actually rescue them from the material existence, just like a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean. So this is a very important point, because especially Hridayananda Maharaj writes a beautiful purport. He says that although one may neglect the devotional service of the Lord to pursue a material life of sense gratification, one can rectify one's position by dedicating one's hard-earned money to the service of the Lord. Then it's like, especially living in this world, Kali Yuga, city of Bombay, the money which we earn, yeah, it is definitely, from practical point of view, it is definitely contaminated with different sin. But to the extent we, at least to our best capacity, if we engage that in the service of the Lord or the devotees, so then it's explained that the Lord will actually rescue that person, although he is nonsense, engaged in an occupation which may be partly sinful. So seeing the difficult austerities accepted by the saintly persons, a pious person should make arrangements for their comfort, just as a boat saves hopeless people who have fallen into the ocean. Similarly, the Lord uplifts persons who have hopelessly fallen into the ocean of material attachment, if they have been charitable to the Brahmanas and the devotees. So Vishnu Chakravarti says that the Lord saves not only the persons who save Brahmanas who are devotees, but also saves those who save any devotee. Not just Brahmana devotee, but those who save any devotees. So now from the, we will just take a 5 minutes break. And we will talk, we'll stay. Now we will go a little fast from 40 verse.
Lord of this person who have who hopelessly fallen. This person must have hopelessly fallen.
In the sense, hopelessly fallen, in the sense, when you are there in the ocean, on your own you can't, no hopeless, you are completely hopeless swimming in the ocean. The material existence is like a hopeless ocean, it's like a deep ocean. Without a ship, you are completely hopeless.
Consciousness,
how much should be the consciousness of the person to support Brahma? Yeah, in the sense, yeah, Krishna talks about, if you see charity also, he talks about three modes. He talks about charity in the mode of passion. Does he say? He says that the charity performed with a desire to get something in return. A charity performed with a desire to get some prestige or something in return, or with a grudge. Sometimes people also do, there is the Purushottamas, as a ritual, the fruitive mentality, they do something. That becomes charity in the mode of passion. So we have to develop a more, in the sense, more selfless motivation. Yattu, what is that word? Dātavyam iti yat dānam dīyate anupakārine deshe kāleche pātreche tat dānam sātvikam smṛtam. Charity in the mode of goodness is that you perform charity as a matter of duty. Dātavyam dīyate anupakārine, without expecting anything in return. And seeing the desha kālan pātra, time, place and circumstance. The charity in the mode of goodness. Charity in the mode of passion is that what is the first line? Yattu pratyupaka yattu pratyupakarartam phalam uddishya vakunaha diyateja pariklishtam taddanam rajasamsmritam. Yattu pratyupakarartam, that means like giving charity, expecting something in return, and the phalam uddishya vapunaha, expecting some fruit, and diyateja pariklishtam, like with a grudge, sometimes like, oh, mujhe karna pad raha hai, like some force actually, with a grudge, diyateja pariklishtam, that becomes charity in mode of passion. Your consciousness is important. I will just come.
Thank you.
So, now I'll go a little fast, because so you can read from, so now from 45th verse, 45 and 46, these two verses talked about the duties of a king. You can read 45 and 46.
Just as a chief bull elephant protect all other elephants in his herd and defend himself as well, similarly a fearless king, just like a father, must save all the citizens from difficulty and also protect himself. An earthly king who protects himself and all citizens by removing all sins from his kingdom will certainly enjoy with Lord Indra in airplanes as brilliant as this.
Such a beautiful person, isn't it? King is explained, but anybody who is responsible, he should protect the dependents from the sins, and he should also protect himself from the sins. So then he actually enjoys the opulence in the heavenly planet. Now from 47 to 49, three verses describe occupations of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra during the times of emergency or during the times of calamity. Can read 47. 47th verse, the occupations, emergency duty for Brahmana. This is the occupations of a Kshatriya in the case of emergency. 48.
A king or other member of the royal order who cannot maintain himself for his normal occupation may act as a Vaishya, may live by hunting, or may act as a Brahmana by teaching others Vedic knowledge. But he may not, under any circumstances, adopt the profession of a Shudra.
Yeah. Next. 49 describes both Vaishya and Shudra. The sense that in the case of emergency, what are the duties of Vaishya and Shudra?
A Vaishya or malcontent man who cannot maintain himself may adopt the occupation of a Shudra. And a Shudra who cannot find a master can engage in sinful activities like making baskets and mats of straw. However, all members of society who have adopted inferior occupations in emergency situations must give up those substitute occupations when the difficulties are past.
Hmm. See, in a sense, a Prabhupada sometimes, in the case of emergency, he told the devotees to give sannyas, he told them to preach. Though they may not be Brahminical, but it was an emergency situation, he told them to actually, but there was nobody who was preaching. Even though devotees were not Brahminical, he gave them sannyas and he told them to preach. Maybe Kshatriya or Vaishya mentality. See, I don't want to go into the detail of this thing. Now, 50th verse. In the 50th verse, Krishna talks about the obligatory actions of the household. So he basically talks about the obligatory actions of the household towards these three, Deva, Rishi, Pitru, Bhuta and Apta. The duties towards the demigods, the sages, one's forefathers, living entities in general, and also human society. So he says that one should worship the demigods by chanting, by performing sacrifices with the word Swaha. One should worship the sages by studying the books which were written by you and also teaching it to others. And forefathers by performing the Shraddha and then the living entities in general. So, Deva, Rishi, Bhuta, Apta, Nrinam, Putrinam, basically these five obligations. Then Maharaj explains that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is training householders, sannyasis, brahmacharis and vanaprasthas, all of them, to engage 24 hours a day in the loving service of the Lord. Those who are full-time missionary workers, it does not mean only those who are living in the temple. Anybody who is fully engaged in devotional service, for them there are no further obligations or sacrifices to perform as confirmed in the 11th canto verse, Devarshi Bhutapta Namputana. And 51st verse, Krishna talks about the optional duties that one should perform, optional duties of a like a grihastha. That is, one should perform sacrifices according to one's means. Householder should comfortably maintain his dependence either with money that comes of its own accord or with that gathered by honest execution of one's duties. And according to one's means, one should perform sacrifices and other religious ceremonies. Now from 52nd to 55th verse, there are some, one or two verses which are like really, when I read it was interesting, we'll just go through them. 52nd to 55th verse, Krishna talks about the life of a, like, how should a householder to be detached. Krishna Chakotaku says the life of a jnani householder, or a, in general these four verses talk about 52nd to 55. It talks about like life of a detached householder, how, like, what kind of a mentality, detached mentality a householder should have. That is described in these four verses. So we'll recite this verse together. Kutumbeshuna sajeta na pramadyet kutumbyapi vipaschin nashvaram pashyet adrishtam api drishtavat.
The householder taking care of many dependent family members should not become materially attached to them, nor should he become mentally unbalanced, considering himself to be the Lord. An intelligent householder should see that all possible future happiness, just like that which he had already experienced in temple, is temporary.
So basically the idea is that one should act like a caretaker. I think Krishna Chandra also was talking about in the morning. said, na prama, because one is like in a house, only we ordering different people. But although one acts like a little lord, surrounded by his family, servants and friends, because nowadays, how many people listen to the children grow up, like how many listen to the parents, that is the answer question. So although one acts like a little lord, one should not through false pride become mentally unbalanced, considering oneself to be the actual lord. So Vipassana indicates that one should remain sober and intelligent, never forgetting oneself to be the eternal servant of the Lord. And another thing is that Nashwaram Vipaschin Nashwaram Pashyet, that means one should see that all the future happiness, just like the happiness which is enjoyed previously, is only temporary. And the next verse talks about the temporary nature of the relations in this world. So this is a very important verse. Putra Dharata Bandhu Nam Sangama Panta Sangamaha Anudeham Vyantyete Swapno Nidranu Goyata.
The association of children, wife, relatives and friends is just like a brief meeting of travellers. With each change of body, one is separated from all such associates, just as one loses the objects one possesses in a dream when the dream is over.
So here is explained, especially like you are in a travel, you are traveling, or suppose when you go to your restaurant or meet some people, also sit at the same table. But that relationship is only temporary. After that, everyone goes in different directions. Or you are going in a train, so in that compartment, different people come. Then afterwards, everyone is, each of them go to a different destination. The same way, in a family, we will be having different family members, but they are all actually like the people we meet during the travels. Every soul is actually is in his own journey, from transmigrating from one body to another body. And in that travel, different souls come together for a brief period of time of 50 years or 60 years or 70 years, which is like a hardly nothing in compared to eternity. And after that, different souls, they go in different directions. Another graphic example which is given is that, what other examples are given? Travelers meeting.
In the flowing water, that sticks coming together.
Yeah, in a flowing water, different sticks are coming together, and then after that they move away. The same example. Another example is that, more graphic is that, like in a prison cell, because the person is actually put in a prison cell. The different people are also coming there, put in the same prison cell. So in the same way, the example which is given is like the family members, the people who are in the family, they are like other members in the prison cell. Because whole material world is like a prison house. So different houses or units are like prison cells. So some people are put, okay, four people in this prison cell, five people. This example nowadays actually, especially for new people, we don't use this example. Because instead of telling material world is a prison house, we tell material world is a like a hospital. Because when you say it is a prison house, then it becomes little difficult for the especially new people to take that, like, I'm a criminal, like that. Since the devotee crowd is giving, but nowadays, evidently the example, hospital, material world is like a hospital, and just like a hospital is meant to actually cure the disease of a person. So similarly, the miseries are given by the Lord to actually cure the disease. That becomes a little more easy for people to take. So if we extend this same example, prison house. Sometimes in the even in the prison house, sometimes like competitions happen. Somebody wins in the competition. So if a person wins in a competition within the prison house, that will not be appreciated by a person who is outside the prison house. If you say that, oh, you have won in Tihar Jail long jump competition, and you show the certificate to others, so then somebody will say, why did you go to Tihar Jail first? So it will be appreciated only within the prison house. So similarly, that the achievements in the material world, it is only appreciated only among the other prisoners. So those who are free citizens, they do not actually appreciate that. Prabhupada gives this also someplace. So the similar verses come in different places. One is Hiranyakashipu speaking to relatives, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva, when they speak. There also they say, Naikatra Priya Samvahasa Suhrudam Chitra Karmana. So even among the devotees also, the relationships are temporary, in the sense that sometimes at a certain point, the initial stage, maybe we will be with certain devotees for 5 years or 4 years or something. And then after that, that devotee has gone to some other place, maybe in some other place. So even among the devotees also, the relationship between the devotees, that is also not, in the sense, it's also temporary. Sometimes one devotee joins the ashram and he leaves the ashram. Yeah, but he may continue to practice. We cannot actually, in the sense, we have to understand that these relationships are also temporary. As long as we have the association of that devotee, we take advantage of that association in order to develop increased attachment to Krishna. So we have to extend the same example even for the devotees, because Nanda Maharaj is telling to Vasudeva the same point. It would have been nice that we were staying together, but then the time and due course of time, the time has actually separated both of us. You are living in Vrindavan, I am living in Mathura. Like that he says. So next verse is something which I read. It was shaken aback. You can read this verse. Ittam parimrishan mukto grihesh atitivat vasan na grahet anupadyeta nirmamo nirahankritaha.
Deeply considering the actual situation, a liberated soul should live at home just like a guest, without any sense proprietorship or false ego. In this way, he will not be bound or entangled by domestic affairs.
So you see that a person should live at a home like a guest. So in the sense, the guest comes, he knows, he always knows that, oh, I have to leave this place after 2 days or 3 days. So this analogy is given for a person living at a house. Liberated soul should live at home just like a guest. It's like understanding the temporary nature. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes in the purport that the only this liberated status may be attained even by one situated in family life. The only requirement is that one should engage in a serious program of Krishna Sankirtan, chanting the holy names and deity worship, participate in the Krishna Maharshi's movement, giving Krishna Maharshi. So now from the 55th verse, three alternatives for a householder are described. A householder devotee who worships me by execution of his family duties, either he may remain at home or go to a holy place, that means accept a vanaprastha ashram, or if he has a responsible son, he may take sannyas. Hridayananda Maharaj says, but in whatever ashram he may take, but in all the ashramas, the ultimate success depends on sincere surrender to the Lord. Therefore, the most important qualification one can have is Krishna consciousness. And 56 to 58 verse, Krishna talks about the faults of attachment to the house. You can read the translation, 56 to 58.
But a householder whose mind is attached to his home and is thus disturbed by ardent desires to enjoy his money and children, who is lusty after women, who is possessed of a miserly mentality, and is unintelligently thinks, everything is mine and I am everything, is certainly bound in illusion.
The next verse. Next verse describes a little graphic description of the how does an attached person think.
Oh my poor elderly parent and my wife with a mere infant in her arm and my other young children, without me they have absolute no one to protect them and will suffer unbearably. How can my poor relative possibly live without me?
Next verse.
Thus, because of his foolish mentality, a householder whose heart is overwhelmed by family attachment is never satisfied. Constantly meditating on his relatives, he dies and enters into the darkness of ignorance.
Yeah. So these three verses describe the faults of attachment to the house. Now we'll go to the next chapter. So next chapter describes especially the conduct of a vanaprastha and sannyas. The previous chapter covered brahmachari, grihastha. It also covered the duties of a king, kshatriya. It covered the occupational duties of brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, and their emergency duties. So now next chapter is focused on vanaprastha and sannyas.
After going through everything about the three verses, you know, the grihastha, is it necessary that he should do his occupational duties? Straightway accept the Lord and surrender to him, and because he is definitely going to bound. It's a very simple thing. If a person who is grihastha, even if he doesn't want to get involved,
see, we have the examples of, it's not that it's simply way, just to become detached. We have the examples of devotees who are staying in the grihastha ashram but at the same time not being bound. We have the examples. And they have shown how to actually be, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even the previous times, like say Prahlad Maharaj or Dhruva Maharaj.
They were fully fixed.
So we have to follow in their footsteps.
I was referring to the example of Sridhar Swami. He had a small baby and his wife died. And then that time he saw a lizard, baby lizard eating insects. So he straightway left the child and went for his further activities.
Yeah, that is why, see, if you remember, I talked about the linear perspective and cyclical perspective. Linear perspective means there is a time where you have to do something. You have to put your energy to do. Cyclical perspective means having a philosophical outlook towards the life. So when we should have these two perspectives, the timing, that is the most important. So Sridhar Swami, yeah, he left it, but sometimes if we try to imitate Sridhar Swami, when you are supposed to be responsible, and if we say, I also follow in the footsteps of Sridhar Swami, and then I'm just leaving, so then it becomes, so that may be a mistake. So we have to know, like, when we have to be show attachment, external attachment, and when we have to show external detachment. The timing becomes important.
I was saying just a simple example. For example, a person, children are grown up and they are on their own, legs, earning, etc. If you say to them, look, enough is enough now, I will not be part of any decision. Whatever you want to take, you are picked. But then society doesn't accept. Even you have to take care of your grandchildren. So that is a problem, absolutely.
Yeah, listen, Kali Yuga situation is different. So we try to see how we can do the best use of the bad bargain, how we can Krishna is everything. And sometimes we cannot actually, we cannot, just to please the society, we can't actually keep doing also. Sometimes we have to put a full stop also. Because, like, there is one beautiful verse which I want to read. In the Pandavas retiring timely. So, first canto, there is one very beautiful verse which comes. Te sadhu krita sarvartha jnatva atyantikam atmanaha manasa darayan asur vaikunta charanam bhujam. So Pandavas are saying, Shri Goswami is saying, those who had performed, they who had performed all the duties such as dharma and artha as it should be done. Pandavas who had performed all duties such as dharma and artha as it should be done, understanding the endless nature of those duties. You have to understand the endless nature of those duties, in the sense like after grandchildren, then after the great-grandchildren, can go on again, understanding the endless nature of those duties. So Pandavas, understanding the endless nature of those duties, and also the word, the same word also means understanding the infinite nature of Krishna's lotus feet. Gyatva atyantikam atmanah. Sometimes people, they understand the endless nature of, oh, how long should I keep doing the same thing? Even somebody who may not be a devotee, he may realize that. How long should I keep working? Like, he may become little tired of actually serving the family. Even a person who may not be a devotee, he may realize that. But then he may not know about the infinite nature of Krishna's lotus feet. Then even if he develops a detachment, because there is no positive attraction towards Krishna, he is not aware of the Krishna, infinite nature of Krishna's lotus feet. Again, he actually, after some time he gets bored. Now, he leaves the duties because being fed up, and then because he doesn't have positive engagement, he feels, oh, let me go back. I saw one of my uncles, already retired long back, but then he went to watch the World Cup, he went to Australia. So you can imagine, because there is no positive engagement, so you have to go all the way to Australia for World Cup. Like. So in the sense, very pious person, they may be going for the, they go for the different temples and satsang, etc. But because there is no solid association of some real devotees, you don't have the understanding of the infinite nature of Krishna's lotus. So we have to be aware of both the things. We have to see the endless nature of those duties. This endless nature, it refers to either family duties, it becomes, it is endless. Even philanthropy also. We can use philanthropy, we can dote, like different, somebody may have the propensity to do philanthropy activities, somebody may have the propensity to do nationalistic activities. We may use the propensity in the service of Krishna. But then we have to understand, when we make philanthropy as the all in all, philanthropy also is like an endless tunnel. Family duties, philanthropic duties, national duties, they are all like endless tunnel. You entering into a tunnel which has no end. Like on Bombay, Pune, you are going into different tunnels come. So initially you may see, you don't see the other part, but after maybe few minutes you see the end, okay, you get some hope. But these duties, either nationalistic duties or philanthropic or small family duties, they are like endless tunnel, there is no end to it. So we can, at a certain point, one has to put a like a full stop in the sense. Like. So that timing, so when you do it at the wrong time, it becomes irresponsible. When we don't do it at the right time, of course, we have to take the guidance. Like. especially Kali Yuga, this one, it's not the real situation, but I'm just telling the principle. So we have to see sometimes, like recently, one devotee was saying that. So one of the devotees, his daughter actually died. So then, so he is already like 60 years old. But now the responsibility of taking the grandson, he's just 7 or 8 years old and maybe 10 years old. Now, it's the time he should be concentrating more on actually Krishna consciousness, maybe more service or more preaching and this one. Or because the daughter died, the responsibility of the grandson, it has come upon him. A devotee was saying how the material world, especially Kali Yuga, sometimes can make things really complicated in the sense. But I am talking from a principal point of view, that how the endless nature of this duty is. But sometimes there can be an exception, which like, we have to really honestly introspect whether it is actually required or it can be taken care of, this one.
Uttanpa's example where he lives, it's also mentioned before.
Fourth kind of... The sense that urgency for Krishna consciousness, like Prabhupada says that Uttanapal, he left home even before arranging for Dhruva Maharaj's marriage. If you read the fourth canto, the ninth or tenth chapter. He left home even before arranging Dhruva Maharaj's marriage. So Maharaj is explaining in a class that like even Prabhupada's Lilamrat, Prabhupada's wife told Prabhupada's mother told Prabhupada's father that if you don't arrange for your daughter's wedding, I will go to Ganges and commit suicide. That time Prabhupada's sister was only not so old. So Maharaj is telling this pastime to show that how even 50 years back, people, the responsibility of arranging for the marriage of the, say, daughters or sons, especially the daughter, it becomes a big responsibility, big headache all the time. So, in the case of Uttanapal, he was living in Satya Yuga. That people were much more responsible, much more conscious of his culture. But he left without arranging for the marriage of the Dhruva Maharaj. He went to the forest even before that. So Maharaj explained that point as how that the urgency for self-realization, this urgency comes higher priority than any other actually priority. So that I was explaining that point. So anyway.
The urgency, like I read somewhere, that Vairagya means Visheshram.
Mm-hmm.
You have that special attachment that
mm-hmm.
The special attachment for
absolute. Oh, Vishesha Raga, the person has. So, we can read through the, starting from the first verse, because I want to complete at least the 248th page. First verse.
Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who desires to adopt the third order of life, Vanaprastha, should enter the forest with a peaceful mind, leaving his wife with his mature sons, or else taking her along with him.
So this is talking about Vanaprastha, how should actually. It's explained the purport that ideally that generally speaking, people would have 100 years of age. At the age of 50, one would take Vanaprastha, and then at the age of 75, a person would take sannyas. This is like in the 100 years of the lifespan. So Kriyan Maharaj says, but in Kali Yuga, when a person will die, this one 50 years, 60 years, something. Therefore, one should adjust the schedule according to Kali Yuga. Adjust the schedule of sense. Of course, Vanaprastha may come at 50 years, but then since it's not that Vibhasan has the plan of taking sannyas at the age of 75 in Kali Yuga. But then he may not live till 75. So one has to adjust the schedule that after some years of vanaprastha one may have to take sannyas, like that he says. So next, next verse. Next verse talks about the food and clothing of a vanaprastha.
Having adopted the vanaprastha order of life, one should arrange one's sustenance by eating uncontaminated bulbs, roots and fruits that grow in the forest. One may dress oneself with tree bark, grass, leaves or animal skin.
Basically, people would go to the forest, so therefore it explained that one should eat the roots and bulbs and fruits. But the principle is that one should eat, at least we can avoid eating in the restaurants, human produced govindas or something. If we can try to eat only prasadam, cooked by devotees. And the next verse describes about the clothing. The next verse describes about other habits, like how one vanaprastha should not cut the hair on his head, body or face, should not manicure his nails, should not pass stool and urine at irregular times, and should not clean his teeth, should not make a special endeavor for dental hygiene, and should take bath 3 times daily, and should keep on the ground. And would sleep on the ground. So basically the principle is that spending as much, whatever the bare minimum required for the bodily maintenance, concentrating more on spiritual activities. And the fourth verse describes about the penance he should perform during the summer, rainy season and winter. Maharaj said in one class that if a person performs these penances, in this age, one will actually die. In the summer, one should surround oneself on all sides with blazing fire. And one should be actually under the scorching light of the sun. And in the rainy season, one should be outside. One should allow oneself, one should all the time be under the rain water. One should remain outside, not inside the house. And in the winter season, one should subject oneself to, one should remain submerged in the water up to one's neck. In the Prithu Maharaj section, it is described how he performed all these austerities. But he is writing the purport that Aradito Yadi Haris Tapasal Satakyam, that if a person is worshipping Krishna, then what is the need of performing austerities? If a person is not worshipping Krishna, then also what is the need of performing austerities? If Krishna is not seen, then what is the use of penance? So, fifth verse describes that one may eat foodstuffs prepared with fire, such as grains or fruits ripened by time. One may grind one's food with mortar and stone or with one's own teeth. So, in sacred forests, one does not find restaurants, supermarkets, fast food chains and so on. And thus one must eat simply, reducing sense gratification. Although in Western countries people eat processed food, one living simply must simply separate and pulverize grains and other foods before eating. This is related to here. So especially if we can, like in Kali Yuga, if we can at least eat food cooked at home, even the devotees, the servants only cook the food. That's not a good habit, actually. The food should be cooked by the family members. You can just eat food cooked at home, cooked by the family members, the prasadam. That itself is like we can say, austerity. And avoiding the restaurants outside. The next verse describes about how one should collect the food personally and do not stock for the future. And of course, in certain difficult place or dangerous time, one may have to stock some food for the future. That is just like, I read a beautiful quote of Maharaj, general quote on simple living. Use what you have, get what you need, and if you need more later, get it later.
On your WhatsApp,
somebody sent emails, I liked it very much. So then, next verse describes how the Vanaprastha should perform seasonal sacrifices but no animal sacrifices. Seasonal sacrifices using charu and sacrificial cakes, but never animal sacrifices or eat meat. And the 8th verse describes the sacrifices and vows which a Vanaprastha should perform or continue to perform. Like during a grahastha time, a person is supposed to perform different agni gotra, darsha, different sacrifices. That a Vanaprastha should continue to perform, and he should continue to perform the chaturmasya. Hridayan Maharaj writes that the conclusion is that everyone should simply chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and avoid the difficult entanglement of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. If one neither chants Hare Krishna nor performs such rituals, one certainly becomes a partially an atheistic fool. And the 9th verse describes the destination of such a Vanaprastha. Such a person, having worshipped me, who is penance personified, he attains Mahara Loka and eventually attains liberation. 10th verse. So 10th verse describes that one who performs these austerities of a Vanaprastha but with material desires, such a person is the greatest fool. Balisha Koparasadaha. Such a person is considered the greatest fool. And the 11th verse describes, can you read the 11th verse?
If Vanaprastha is overtaken by old age and because of his crumbling body is not longer able to execute his prescribed duties, he should place the sacrificial fire within his heart by meditation, then fixing his mind on me, he should enter into the fire and give up his body.
This verse talks about basically that sometimes the ideal plan is that after 75 a person takes sannyas. But if a person has actually, even before 75, if a person is like becoming very much troubled with old age and disease, and Vanaprastha can actually leave his body by the lighting of the fire within his heart and entering that fire. The principle is that although this may not be possible in the modern age, we can appreciate the absolute seriousness of going back home, back to Godhead, as evidenced in this verse.
Is it possibility of having any Vanaprastha in Kali Yuga, because there is statement Grahastha and Sannyas. Even if he goes to the forest, he will have a problem.
No, Kali Yuga, Vanaprastha means, in the sense, a suitable time, we have to spend more time, you have to definitely increase your chanting, increase the number of hours of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and increase your preaching. Well, it's not increasing the chanting and reading, it's only, we just become only a Bhajanandi. Ours is a preaching moment. Like, we have to increase our preaching, we have to increase our, the round should not remain at 16, it has to increase beyond 16. We have to increase our study of the Bhagavatam and we have to preach more. So if we do that, I think that is, I will say. So 12th verse describes the qualification for a sannyas. So when Vanaprastha is practicing this life, when should a Vanaprastha take sannyas? This verse describes that when the Vanaprastha, understanding that even promotion to Brahmaloka is a miserable situation, develops complete detachment then he may take the sannyasa order of life. He should consider even going to Brahmaloka is a miserable situation. And 13th verse describes, in the 13th verse, translation.
Having worshipped me according to scriptural injunctions and having given all one's property to the sacrificial priest, one should place the fire sacrifice within oneself. Thus, with the mind completely detached, one should enter the sannyasa order of life.
So, Pradyan Maharaj talks about how your sannyasi should be very much vigilant about material desires, about the weeds of material desires, which may again surface. One may possess a beautiful garden filled with fruits and flowers, but without vigilant maintenance, the garden will be overrun by weeds. Similarly, one who achieves a beautiful state of Krishna consciousness takes the sannyasa order of life. But if he does not vigilantly and painstakingly keep his heart clean, there is always the danger of a relapse into illusion. This is always warning. And the 14th verse describes that the man taking sannyas is going to sarpa. This verse talks about when a person who is performing such strict austerities and is preparing to take sannyas, sometimes the demigods may become envious of him. And demigods may think, oh, this person is going to surpass us. He will go back to God and he will go to maybe Maharaloka, Tapaloka, which is higher than us. So thinking like that, the demigods may present obstacles to such a person. And Krishna is saying that one should patiently tolerate those obstacles. And one should not pay heed to those obstacles. The sannyasi should pay the demigods and the manifestations no heed. So Krishna is also warning that demigods may actually present some obstacles. Wow. Any example which has come in the Bhagavatam?
Prithu Maharaj.
No, not Prithu Maharaj. Vishwamitramani comes.
Dhruva
Maharaj, yeah. Dhruva Maharaj, he tells that Matir Vidushita, that was Matir Vidushita Deva Patadbir Asahishnubihi Yo Narada Vachastatyam Nagra Hisham Asattamaha. Dhruva Maharaj was lamenting that the demigods actually polluted my mind because of that I could not take full shelter of Narada Muni's instruction. Otherwise, if I had followed Narada Muni's instruction, I would have gone back to Godhead. Lord would not have told me to actually remain in this world for 30,000 years. So it talks about that. And 15th verse, yeah, it's about sannyasi's death. If a sannyasi desires to wear something besides a mere coping, he may use another cloth around his waist and keeps to cover the coping. Otherwise, if there is no emergency, he should not keep anything besides his danda and water pot. And 16th verse talks about how a sannyasi should purify his words, actions and steps and water. The sense when he is actually walking, he should actually put his foot on the ground only after verifying with his eyes that there are no living entities. And should drink water after filtering with a cloth. And should speak only proper words. And he should perform only those activities which his mind has ascertained to be pure. In other words, Krishan Maharaj says that by serious consideration one can understand that any activity other than devotional service to Krishna has no ultimate value. Therefore, one should exclusively engage in the purified activities of Krishna consciousness. So when you talk about sannyas, Tridandi sannyasi means one who actually dedicates his mind, body and words. So even Mother Yashoda was a Tridandi sannyasi. Mother Yashoda, the Damodar Leela, her body was engaged in churning butter for Krishna. With his words, she was actually thinking about, she was speaking the glories of Krishna. With her mind, she was thinking about Krishna. The essence, the essence of sannyas can be imbibed by anybody. So 17th verse describes about the essence of sannyas, that is controlling the body, mind and words and engaging them fully in Krishna's service. That is the essence of sannyas. So one was not accepted the three internal disciplines of avoiding useless speech, avoiding useless activities and controlling the life here can never be considered a sannyasi merely because of his carrying the bamboo rods. It is the 18th verse. We will end with this verse.
Rejecting those houses that are polluted and untouchable, one should approach without previous cultivation. Seven houses and be satisfied with that which is obtained thereby begging. According to necessity, one may approach each of the four occupational orders of society.
So this verse talks about especially for a sannyasi. So, sannyasi, he is supposed to beg from the different houses. The principles in begging. So one principle is that Bhiksham Chaturushu Varneshu Vigarhyan, rejecting impure houses. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, he would make sure that he would only eat what condition he made, where he would eat prasadam. One is a Lakpati. One is chanting 1 lakh names. And in fact, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even among the devotees, you would only eat at the houses of Brahmana devotees. Like for example, when you are staying in Varanasi, when you are staying in Varanasi, you are staying at the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, but then you would go to take prasadam at the house of Tapan Mishra. Sometimes the Maharshi was invited, but he would go to take the house prasadam at, I think, either Tapan Mishra or Chandrasekhar Acharya. Because one of the devotees is not from a Brahmana community. Of course, the reason is that because at that time, if a sannyasi is seen to take prasadam from a house of a person who is not a Brahmana, the sannyasi would be criticized. It would not be, the social culture was like that. Because we know, like, we cannot, a devotee, well, he wanted to observe that social culture so that because of that he would even avoid the take prasadam from the houses of devotees who are not coming from the Brahmana system. Just to observe the sort, just not to create agitation in the society. Yeah, Sanodiya Brahmana. Yeah, that is because Madhavendra Puri had taken prasad. Sanodiya, when Mahaprabhu reaches Mathura, that Sanodiya Brahmana invites him to his house, and then but he tells Govinda, you cook prasadam for Mahaprabhu. He doesn't want to cook. Usually when you love somebody, you want to serve that person. But Sanodiya Brahmana, out of love towards Mahaprabhu, he did not want to serve Mahaprabhu. Because he understood that if people come to know that Mahaprabhu had eaten the prasadam cooked by me, because he is considered a low-class Brahmana, then people would unnecessarily criticize the character of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What kind of a sannyasi, where all he is taking? So, because a devotee cannot tolerate the criticism of the Supreme Lord, so out of love towards the Lord, he didn't want to cook for prasadam. But Mahaprabhu said, but Madhavendra Puri has taken prasadam from your house. Therefore, I will also take prasadam because I want to follow in the footsteps of Madhavendra Puri. So here it's explained, sannyasi should reject the impure houses, and he should, while begging, he should not make a previous calculation. So this house will give more, this house will give less. Like, he should not make a previous calculation. And in this way, one should actually beg. According to Vedic injunction, a renowned saint should beg from a Brahmana community, but if there is a danger of his starving, he may beg from Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas and even Shudras, if they are not sinful as expressed here by the word Vigarhyan. So basically, see, in the Vedic culture, they would be very careful about eating. They would be very careful about which food they eat, from where actually, who is cooked the food, because that definitely affects the consciousness. So, yeah. Yes, the next paragraph I'll just end it. So, saintly person should be given. So, next paragraph, Riyan Maharaj says, talks about the principle of begging. He says that in the modern day, people who beg are considered criminal. They are actually, they say that those who oppose Vedic culture pass laws to make begging by saintly persons a criminal act. In this way, they insult and persecute saintly beggars, considering them to be ordinary vagrants. So there is a concept of imposed poverty and inspired poverty. Some people say that some people, they want to eradicate poverty. They talk about, oh, we have to, like, we should eradicate poverty, we should not allow the beggars, etc. But actually, you have to know, we can never eradicate poverty. Many philanthropists, they have meeting and they talk about eradicating poverty. Because actually, we can never eradicate poverty. The reason is that there are people who are poor because the poverty is imposed upon them. Because the capitalistic culture, what does it do? Capitalism means it creates so much of inequality among the wealth. Especially in America, with the statistics, the wealth distribution is very much unequal. Some people are like highly poor, some people are like extraordinarily rich. We can see in India also. Capitalism distributes wealth unequally. Communism distributes poverty equally. So, the capitalistic society imposes poverty on people. So, maybe if we adjust the system, we can eradicate the imposed poverty. But then you can never eradicate the inspired poverty. Inspired poverty means those who are sannyasis or sadhus, they are inspired to remain poor. They don't want to have bank accounts. You cannot actually impose them, oh, you have to have it. The inspired poverty can never be eradicated. So also he says that actually, this actually, a lazy person begging to avoid work is certainly abominable, but a saintly person dedicated to the service of the Lord and practicing the discipline of begging to develop full dependence on the Lord's mercy should be given all facility in human society. Such a person should not be actually, like, they are making laws to actually, oh, this is a criminal act, that is wrong. And of course, he talks about how the sannyasi should have the madhukara vritti. Madhukara means a honeybee goes from, collects little from different flower. Similarly, sannyasi should not collect from one house more, little from different houses. That's what it's explained. So we'll, so next week we'll complete this chapter and we'll also go to the next chapter. So we'll, now we'll go a little fast. I want to like finish in, we just have 11 chapters more. So the earliest I want to finish. So next week I will have the test. I'll send the questions for the previous chapter. Nantaram Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. You can take the papers, corrected papers.
Sir, MCQ is ready. I will email it to you.
Hello.
Madhuri.
Hello. Thank you.